Future generations may look back upon this time in history as the time the dams came down. The last few years have seen a flurry of activity related to removing dams from the region's waterways. The largest project is still in limbo, the proposed removal of four major dams from the Klamath River. But the Rogue River already lost two dams on its main channel in the last decade, and dams on several tributaries are gone or going. Those include the Weimer and Fielder dams standing for the moment on Evans Creek, a Rogue River tributary. Let's hear about the plans for those. Two guests in the studio with me. Brian Barr is the project manager for the Weimer and Fielder dam removal. He's doing the project on behalf of the Geos Institute. He's currently the Rogue Watershed Council executive director. Brian, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. Great to be here, Jeff.
Bob Hunter is with us as well from Water Watch of Oregon. Bob, good to see you again.
Good to see you, too.
And you can provide, I think, a pretty good large-scale view of what's been going on in the Rogue Basin for the last 20, 25 years anyway. Can you give us a quick summation of what's been going on with dams?
Sure. As you mentioned, some of the large mainstem dams of the Rogue River have now been removed, starting if you're moving from the coast upstream, Savage Rapids Dam at River Mile 107, and then just upstream from that, near the town of Gold Hill, the city of Gold Hill's diversion dam was also removed. And then in 2010, that culminated in the removal of Gold Ray Dam, which was a defunct power dam that the Jackson County had inherited. And so we now really have free and unimpeded passage for 157 miles on the main stem of the Rogue River. But that's only sort of a part of the whole system that's important to salmon and steelhead, because many of these fish spawn in the tributary streams. And we have an opportunity now to complement the restoration work that's been done on the main stem and start to improve fish passage and habitat in these very important critical spawning tributaries, Evans Creek being one of those.
Dams are built for very different reasons. I mean, we can have them for irrigation, we can have them for power generation, we can have them for flood control. All those exist. In general, though, I mean, are dams generally quite unfriendly to fish?
Well, generally, dams are quite unfriendly to fish. They alter river systems, and especially if you have anadromous fish, fish that migrate from freshwater to the ocean, because they pose obstacles to passage both upstream and downstream for fish, so they can be very harmful. And as you pointed out, not every dam's the same. And this country's been a dam building nation. We have literally tens of thousands of dams across the country, and many in the Rogue Basin. And like any type of infrastructure, after time, some infrastructure, dams, buildings, or whatever, become economically or functionally obsolete, and some of them were just for a single purpose and are no longer being used for that purpose and have been abandoned. So I think dam removal should be a tool that's considered in any kind of river management scenario.
And has it, I know we've also, we didn't even talk about the Elk Creek Dam, which never even got completely finished on a Rogue River tributary north of Medford. But that seems to be a pretty good example of a transition in thinking, where this was a necessary dam, and then it was like, well, maybe it's not so necessary, but it's going to get built anyway. Ultimately, it was stopped by a lawsuit.
Yes, and the reason for also not pushing forward, it never made sense economically, and the benefits there were very marginal, whereas the main benefit was supposed to be flood control, and that flood control benefit was basically being met by Lost Creek, almost entirety. Elk Creek added very little to that. So it was not a good investment for the taxpayer to complete that project even after it had been started, as well as being an obstacle to salmon and steelhead and another very important spawning tributary, Elk Creek.
Brian Barr, give us an overall view, if you would, of the two dams we're talking about here now today, Weimer and Fielder on Evans Creek, which runs up basically from north from the city of Rogue River.
Yeah, right. So Evans Creek, headwaters of Evans Creek are sort of on the divide between the Umpqua and the Rogue, like you said, north and a little bit east of the town of Rogue River. The river comes down and empties into the Rogue at the city of Rogue River. Weimer and Fielder dams are located on the main stem of Evans Creek. Fielder Dam about River Mile 3, so 3 miles upstream of the mouth of the Rogue there at the city of Rogue River. And then Fielder Dam another 7 or so miles upstream of that near the town of Weimer, ironically. So these dams were built, about 80 years ago, somewhere in that range. They were both constructed entirely to serve the purpose of diverting water for irrigation purposes, and that function stopped 20 or 30 years ago, something like that. So those dams both sit in the river, really doing nothing but forming a reservoir pool. And so here's how they harm salmon. Bob talked about this a little bit before, but both dams impede the passage of migratory fish. So they're not complete blockages, although for some species in certain water year types, they probably are a complete blockage. Really, here I'm focusing on fall Chinook salmon, which return to the Rogue River and the tributaries in relatively low flow periods of the year, August, September, October. The fish ladders that were built do a passable job of passing fish during the winter under ordinary flows. In the fall, pretty lousy at passing fish. So fall Chinook pretty much stop their upstream migration at Fielder Dam. So they are only able to access about 3 miles of Evans Creek. Removing that dam and Weimer would allow them access to another 13 to 16 miles of habitat. There's about 70 total miles of habitat for anadromous fish upstream of Fielder. So there we're talking about coho and steelhead primarily. So 70 miles of habitat that these dams impede fish access to. And really, you know, the focus of fish passage a lot is on blocking fish, and that's obviously important. You remove the dam and you restore all of that habitat. Impeding fish passage is a problem as well. All of these fish are running on a clock. They know when they need to spawn, and if we delay them for weeks, you know, 1 to 2 weeks, we can really have a pretty big impact on their success in spawning or the success of their juveniles or the number of eggs that a female is able to produce. So even impeding fish passage is a problem. What we've seen on the main stem after the three dams were removed is that fish are showing up at Lost Creek Dam, which is a complete blockage to fish passage, 2 to 3 weeks earlier than we ever had been seeing them before. So those fish should be a lot more fit when they spawn. They should be have a lot better survival of their eggs, produce a lot more eggs, which will have a really positive benefit on their juveniles. And so over the years, we should be seeing a really increased benefit from allowing those fish to get to their spawning grounds more quickly. Also, what we're seeing on the main stem, and we'll see this same thing on Evans Creek, is that those reservoir pools, which is about a mile and a quarter of habitat we're talking about on Evans Creek behind these two dams, will create spawning habitat in those places that are currently reservoirs. So again, give fish more opportunities and more areas that they can produce young.
We're talking about a project to remove a couple of dams from the Rogue River tributary Evans Creek, the Weimer and Fielder Dams, with Brian Barr and Bob Hunter. You can join this discussion. Your comments and questions are welcome. 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area. 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Bob Hunter, you mentioned when dams are no longer needed for the purpose they were developed. We were talking earlier about the dams removed from the main stem of the Rogue itself, including Gold Ray Dam, which was a power transmission dam, what, a century ago, wasn't it?
Well, it was constructed more than a century ago and provided some great benefits at the time. It provided the first sort of power to the city of Medford and the surroundings. But I believe it was in the 80s as well, Pacificor.
1972.
Pacificor abandoned it. It wasn't economically worthwhile to make the investment to keep it going. In fact, it was one of the last hydro facilities operating on a sort of a rope turbine system.
It was really an ancient system.
And there was some land associated with it. So Jackson County took it over along with some land. So we have some nice public land up there right now. But it was the county looked into whether or not it would be economically feasible to retrofit it again for power, and it just was not. So it became really a liability to the owner, Jackson County, in that case. And then in terms of Savage Rapids Dam and City Gold Hill Diversion Dam, those dams were still providing the diversion function, but they had a number of problems, and there was a better and safer way to serve that diversion function by installing pumps to replace the diversion function of those dams. So that was the situation there.
So, Brian Barr, I'm curious to know if the process gets easier with repetition, if having removed a couple of dams, and we're not just talking about the three that Bob mentioned on the main stem of the Rogue, also there was the Bear Creek Dam that came out in downtown Medford in the mid-90s, I think. a couple of other little dams here and there. Does it get easier over time to do things like establish ownership of the dam, figure out who's going to pay for this, and then get the paperwork rolling?
I don't think I'd say easier. I think I'd say that the folks that have invested in working on these sorts of projects, Bob Hunter being one of those, we're getting better at it. So I think the process actually is on the funding side, I think people are aware that there's a lot of momentum here, and so on the funding side, I think maybe that aspect of it is getting easier. Funders are seeing the benefits, making dollars and cents a little bit more available to folks that are pursuing these sorts of projects. I think there are some landowners that are also seeing the benefits. But generally, the projects, I think, are about the same in level of difficulty. I think we're just getting a whole lot better at figuring out how to navigate the system and establish the agreements that need to happen and bringing the projects together quickly and efficiently. And we're doing a better job of it, both for ourselves and for the landowners that we're impacting.
So what is the price tag on the removal of the Weimer and Fielder dams, and where does the money come from?
So there was about a $200,000 investment that was needed just to do the types of environmental review and analysis and the engineering to get to the point of knowing how much it would cost to actually remove and to satisfy permit requirements. And then in the case of Fielder and Weimer, it's the total price tag for actually removing them is about $640,000. And I think to kind of get back to what Brian was saying, there's been a lot of momentum in the Rogue. I think the first thing we should understand is the Rogue River is an extremely popular and important river to the state and nationally as well. It was one of the first rivers included in the group of wild and scenic rivers back in the 60s, and it has the most significant run of salmon and steelhead in the state outside of the Columbia, of a river that's totally within the state of Oregon. And because of that and the significance and the economic importance of the fishery, there is a lot of interest in trying to protect and restore that. And that helps with the funding. And with the dam removals we've had in the main stem, we've developed sort of a technical team with state and federal agencies, and having that team in place and being able to coordinate activities and look for funding has made it progress a lot easier. We've been really lucky in the state of Oregon because we have the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board that has lottery funds that actually Citizens Initiative had dedicated to do restoration work. So we're able to channel some of those lottery funds and bring them down here into the Rogue to do good work. And you have to have matching funds, and we're able to work with federal and state agencies that have an interest in bringing some federal funds, plus just private foundations as well have contributed to these projects. And a lot of small donations that really help with match from local sport fishing groups, the Rogue Fly Fishers, Middle Rogue Steelheaders, Southern Oregon Fly Casters, basically Federation Fly Fishermen. So there's a lot of interest and a lot of contributions.
And a lot of support. If I could just pile on to that, sure. I just want to get on to, you know, the funding is needed to buy stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's really neat, I think, about these dam removal projects is we're not buying stuff. We're buying jobs. There's very little materials and equipment costs. There's a little bit of gas. This is providing jobs for engineers and for local contractors to do this work. It's almost entirely labor that we're purchasing with these dollars. So the really great projects we're putting people to work.
We're talking about the removal of Weimer and Fielder dams from Evans Creek, a Rogue River tributary north of the city of Rogue River, with Brian Barr, who's the project manager for Geos Institute, and Bob Hunter from Water Watch of Oregon. You can join the discussion on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760 around the region, 800-838-3760, email address jx@jeffnet.org. Check out Brian and Bob on Facebook as well. Something you said earlier, Brian, about the 70 miles of habitat, not just on Evans Creek itself. There are a couple of forks of Evans Creek and then other little tributaries, right? Is that what we're talking about?
That's
here?
What we're talking about, right. So, right, the main stem of Evans Creek is, I don't know, 18, 19, 20 miles long. Then you get some forks. There are some tributaries that come right into the main stem. What's really interesting, you know, for folks that don't know about salmon and steelhead and other migratory fish, they all kind of use a different part of the stream system. And so, you know, way up high in the system, all you're going to find are steelhead. A little bit lower, you're going to find mostly coho and some steelhead. And then we transition in the main stem of Evans Creek, to that most of that habitat is going to be used by Chinook. So they separate themselves so they're not competing for space. We're having the greatest impact, really, with fish passage on coho. Even though steelhead get farther up in the system, steelhead are much better at jumping. So if we give them sort of adverse conditions for passage, steelhead can figure out a way to make it through. Coho are lousy swimmers and they're lousy jumpers, and so they have a hard time, which is why that's the threatened species in our area. They get hit pretty hard by fish passage. We have a, you know, despite all the good work that's gone on in the Rogue, there are still a known number of about 1,100 fish passage barriers in the system. So there's a lot of work to be done yet to make sure that these fish can get where they need to go.
What is especially exciting about this project, there's 20 miles of really high-quality prime habitat in the West Fork of Evans Creek, and it's almost all on Federal Bureau of Land Management land, and providing access to that high-quality system up there is really important to the fishery.
Let us take a phone call. We have Phyllis and Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about removing Weimer and Fielder dams with Brian Barr and Bob Hunter.
Yes, hello. I'm wondering if there's any if there are maybe checklists of cautions to be looked at before a dam is removed. I'm thinking about the Savage Rapids Dam outside of Grants Pass. After that dam was removed, there was all of a sudden a lot of talk about some very toxic material flowing down the Rogue because of the removal, because the tailings from the mining that had been piling up against the dam had not been removed before the dam itself was removed.
All right. Worthwhile question. Thanks for that, Phyllis. Appreciate it.
So, yes, first of all, there is a checklist of things that you need to run through to make sure that you're not going to be unduly causing any adverse impacts in the removal process. And sediment is always a big issue with all dam removals, and very careful and thorough testing is done. And testing was done behind Savage Rapids Dam, and no contaminants were found that, you know, exceeded any safety levels. And, in fact, there have been no contamination problems with the removal of the main stem dams. There have been some rumors circulating that are without any foundation whatsoever. And there, in fact, there's been a recent study now in looking at dam removals across the country, and the basic conclusion of that study has been that the dam removals have been providing many benefits as hope for, and also not creating problems. And they found with the sediment thing that it really moves through the system a lot more quickly than people had originally anticipated at many of these projects.
So there is sediment released, but it just gets out of the system.
Right.
Faster.
Sediment can be managed naturally, but you do have to go through the testing, and it is important to make sure you don't create a contamination problem.
Was there anything like that with Weimer and Fielder dams, Brian Barr?
Absolutely. So Bob mentioned earlier that there were, you know, a couple hundred thousand dollars leading up to this effort that gets us our designs, and we have to go through a really rigorous permitting process. Part of that permitting process was to do a sediment evaluation. So a similar study was done at both of the Evans Creek dams to look at whether or not there were any chemicals that were concerned about, contaminants to be concerned about, stored in the sediments. We got a clean bill of health there with relationship to these two dams, so we're moving forward with the same sort of approach.
What do we know about what has happened with fish return when dams do come out? I mean, is there pretty good evidence now after a couple of dams have been removed to show that the fish do return to these native areas?
Absolutely. I mean, salmon, because of their migratory nature, they're pretty good at colonizing habitats that are opened up. Again, a lot of the structures that we're talking about that we've removed in the Rogue River system weren't complete blockages to fish passage. So, but what we're seeing really strong was a really strong signal after these dams were removed on the main stem. Fish are showing up higher in the system much earlier than they were in the past, in better condition, and fish are using the areas that were reservoirs before they didn't spawn in as spawning areas. So we're making more habitat available where the reservoirs were, and we're getting fish up higher up in the system where they can do good things and spawn and make baby salmon that will come back 5 years later.
Well, that's a big important one, the idea that we're not wearing them out by having
Absolutely.
Them take it's, extra time getting past dams.
It's very interesting on the Elwha dams, which were complete blockages to fish. In Washington, fish were appearing upstream of the dams within days after the removal. I mean, just they're
really,
ready. They're there. They're migratory, as Brian said. They will move up and reseed a system if they were totally blocked. And,
yeah, really quickly. Condit Dam, same thing. So all of these big dams that were complete blockages, fish show up right away.
Let's take another call. We have Kent in Rogue River on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Brian Barr and Bob Hunter.
Hello. I actually have two questions. One is sort of narrow, and that is, how much will the water level rise when the dam is actually breached? And two is a broader one. If you want to view the removal, is there a place you can watch?
All right. I'm looking for an overlook. Thanks for that. Kent, appreciate it. Bob?
So first off, these dams store have very little water behind them, and the projects will be done this summer. The flows in Evans Creek are going to be low this year. It's another drought year we're entering. Last year they were really low, so there might be a little pulse of water when you initially breach, but it's not going to be anything that creates any issues there. And then the second thing is, these projects are on private property, and we want to respect the private property owners, so they're not really projects that are where the public is going to have an opportunity to view the deconstruction.
Yeah, I pile on to that response. So we're real sensitive to the private property owners here, and this is going to be an unsatisfactory answer, but it's not as exciting as it sounds like. You know, it's a little bit like putting icing on a cake. You'd rather eat the cake, right? And you know, it's a construction project. In 2 days, they'll be gone, and it's sort of you know, like taking a Lego thing apart. It's not that exciting.
So which 2 days are they scheduled at this point?
They are not. But you know, I think we're looking at probably July and August for one, and then the next.
All right. So by Labor Day, potentially the Weimer and Fielder dams could be gone.
You know, we're going to be out of the river by September 15th.
Okay. Brian Barr is the Geos Institute's project manager for the removal of Weimer and Fielder dams. Bob Hunter is a board member at Water Watch of Oregon. Thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jeff.